Hello and welcome to the Panic Pod podcast. This is episode 8 and today we're going to be looking at intrusive thoughts. Talking of intrusive, how is my co-host Ella Jean?
Am I intrusive? Am I just popping in unnecessarily? Yeah, pretty good today. I'll try not to interrupt you too much. No, it's
you,
been...
You have a nicer voice, it's okay.
There's a good EQ balance between the low Mancunian accent and the sort of slightly nasally Canadian one. I don't know, I've been listening to two of my Canadians over here and I'm starting to change perspective on it, so...
So for anyone who's listening at home, for a few months now, Ella has been back in Canada and we've been recorded the last few sessions over Skype, which has been fun, and you've been really patient with me as well. How does this work?
It's working up. Yeah, it's going well though. Yeah, this is just how we're. I mean, we're ruining the veneer. We're ruining what people think about it when they're listening from the outside. It was totally seamlessly flawless.
Yeah. So, Ella, pass me my glass of water. Thank you. Yeah, there we go. Veneer returned. Right. Intrusive thoughts. How much do you know about intrusive thoughts?
We've talked in a couple episodes before this about I myself am the type of person where I definitely have sort of an inner monologue that constantly kind of goes and runs, and people have different terms for what that inner monologue is. I guess in like Eastern philosophy stuff, it's usually called the monkey mind. Mm-hmm. And for some people, is that the same as like ego? I guess, I don't know. But other people, not everybody has that as strongly as other people. Like some people don't really experience to have like a constant kind of inner monologue going, and people who think probably more like logically or through like pictures or different sort of abstract thoughts brought together, like not everybody has a very linguistic brain. But I would think of intrusive thoughts as when that inner monologue voice is dialed up to a volume that you don't really enjoy, that it's harder to ignore, and they feel intrusive because they feel like unwanted. And I recently just saw an ad for Headspace, the meditation app, and they were talking about how meditation, some people, when they start meditation, they really don't enjoy it because they realize all of these thoughts that pop up in their head. And they sort of feel like the thoughts that you have define you. And what they were trying to teach through the Headspace app is that, no, like once you start meditating, you can experience how these thoughts just happen, and the fact that you think them and don't necessarily act on them, or you give them space to get processed, is a good thing. So you don't need to always feel like you're defined by what you think about. That's as much as I can offer.
Brilliant. I don't mean that in a patronizing way. It's really spot on. And the key points that I take from that are unwanted. And they don't define you. And these are the two things when working with clients that I look at, because we all get intrusive thoughts. And the definition of an intrusive thought is basically a thought that we don't want to have, but that causes us, well, they become a problem when it causes us significant stress. So I'll be quite blazing and blunt in this episode. Some people have some really quite serious intrusive thoughts. So I've worked with people who are parents, who have intrusive thoughts about strangling their children, murdering their children, murdering their loved ones, intrusive thoughts about eating sick and feces, intrusive thoughts about walking over bridges. What if I jump off? You know, what if I lose control?
That seems to be a common thread that's associated with intrusive thoughts as well. Is it sort of like, it's just a thought, but it leads you to think, how much control do I have? What is the, you're exercising, it feels like you're exercising self-control, but you're just kind of letting those thoughts pass.
That's exactly what's happened. Well, here's the difference of what I want to talk about in this episode today, is that everyone gets intrusive thoughts. It's just our own interpretation of them that's the problem. Mm. And that's when our anxious response comes in. So let's take, I'll just list some other intrusive thoughts as well for anyone who does suffer from a home. Yeah. So there are just a few. A lot of people get sexual intrusive thoughts. So I've worked with lovely people who are very afraid because they have intrusive thoughts about loved ones, sexually, children, stuff like that. And what I'll say is that's okay. You know, if the thoughts are intrusive and you don't want them, then that's okay. They don't define you. It's just your relationship with them that's really important. So, for example, and actually what I'd like to look at today is the myths surrounding it and why people suddenly suffer with intrusive thoughts. Oh, lastly, you can also get intrusive thoughts that are just words, songs that just don't seem to leave and stick around. You know, we all get an earworm now and then.
Cool way to think about it. That's so important that, yeah, like if we, like, you can't just completely remove ever having intrusive thoughts from your head, but it's good to recognize that, like, this is the same phenomenon that's happening to your brain as getting Adele stuck in your head or whatever.
Exactly. And if you get angry and annoyed at it, it kind of sticks around more.
Yeah.
I often get your music stuck in my head as well. You know, let's give you a plug if you want to listen to Ella Jean's music. It is fantastic.
You know, there's a particular song
called Workout that sticks in my head.
Yeah. Well, I mean, literally that was also the last text that I just silenced my phone from, was a friend saying that a song got stuck in his head. So as a singer, I really apologize for anyone who's ever had my song stuck in their head. Because, you know, that's an unwanted thing sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes even the best songs I don't want stuck in my head. So
I think apologize people would rather and that.
Say you're welcome.
People would rather that than intrusive thoughts about murdering family, maybe. Mm. Except we all have that one uncle that maybe one day. So looking at kind of intrusive thoughts and why they matter. So let's take an anxious person and what we know about them. And what we know is that their amygdala is tuned to kick off the anxious response when there's danger. And let's say he's walking across a bridge. At the same time, a non-anxious person, Joe Bloggs, and we all hate Joe Bloggs because Joe Bloggs always gets it right. Joe Bloggs is walking across the same bridge. Now, at the same time, they both have an intrusive thought. What if I throw myself off this bridge?
Mm.
And non-anxious people get intrusive thoughts as well. Everyone does. Non-anxious person goes, that's a funny thought, and then kind of carries on. Like accepting that Adele's in their head. Just, that's an earworm. I'll just accept that it's going to stick around for a bit and move on.
Mm.
But the anxious person goes, oh, and the amygdala kicks in, and the fright and the immediacy of the body kicks in. And suddenly, that thought becomes a little bit more of a reality. Well, it feels like it anyway. Of course you're not going to throw yourself off a bridge if you're anxious. But that's the difference. It's believing that the amygdala kicking in to a thought means something, like something bad is really going to happen. So, oh my God, actually, I might do. And here's the difference. Joe Bloggs keeps on walking and accepts it. But the anxious person, and this is why it feeds into our last episode, it was the episode before, avoidance, is that they start to change their behavior. So they start walking away from the edge. And they start making sure that they don't, you know, go near edge or fall over, or that they start avoiding the bridge because they're afraid of that thought. And that is just a small example of how intrusive thoughts can affect people everywhere. Does that make sense? I hope.
Yeah. No, that does. And so, to me, that's separating and distinguishing once again when you're able to isolate the amygdala's response. You're able to understand where this affects anxiety or how this affects anxiety is that being able to have that thought pass through your mind and not get attached to it is something that everyone experiences. And we all think that there's like that Stephen Fry quote that like, we all think that everybody is walking around with a baseball bat and all we have behind our backs is a Q-tip. We think that no one else experiences the same thoughts, but they do. But what separates an anxious person from other people is when your amygdala fires off, that can spiral you into a whole other realm of thinking. Does yes. this mean that I am suicidal? Does this mean I have to go see a therapist? Does this mean? Like, what if is sort of how that's extending the thought process. Does that make sense?
That's a brilliant way of putting it, yeah. Suddenly we lose it. And there's a fantastic book, and I will plug it. It's not my book. I mean, you should buy my book, but there's a book written by cleverer people than I. And it's called Needing to Know for Sure, by the great Dr. Sally Winston and Dr. Martin Seif. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Great, we'll put that in the show notes. We'll put a link to that as well as your books this episode.
Oh, they're absolutely brilliant. They're a couple of my heroes. And they conceptualize what happens when we deal with an intrusive thought, not anxious, and why anxious people get stuck with them. So I'll give you an example. Let's say I am at a barbecue and I see my younger cousin who is 12 years old, and I have an intrusive thought about my 12-year-old cousin. Now, I know that I do not fancy children. But when the anxious response kicks in, like you said, it's the what ifs. So it says, what if you are? What if there's something in your brain that you didn't know? What if you're doing that? And if you're anxious and don't quite understand intrusive thoughts, you can end up going down that avenue. And so what happens is two voices come up. Wise mind is the one that Joe Bloggs used on the bridge. That's a funny thought. Carry on. But when we're anxious, two more voices kick in. And these voices are going to come up a lot in these podcasts. Not just for intrusive thoughts, but for a lot of things. The first voice is worried voice. So that's the voice that always begins every sentence with, what if? So like you'd said before, what if this, what if that, what if I kill myself, what if I'm suicidal, what if I need to see a therapist? That's what worried voice does. So in this scenario, it's going, what if you secretly do fancy children? What if you do that? What if you do something horrible? What if you lose control? What if the family find out? What if your wife finds out? You know, and all this is just a harmless intrusive thought.
But all of those thoughts happen as the knock-on effect of kind of validating the initial thought.
But that's where the other voice comes in. Perfect. The other voice, the most damaging voice, isn't the what if. It's the one called false comfort. Now, false comfort is the one that changes your behavior and reinforces the amygdala's response. So if I'm suddenly at a barbecue, my 12-year-old cousin comes over and I have an intrusive thought about her, I go, oh my God, what if that means something about me? And then false comfort will immediately step in and go, well, look away. Don't look away. Show her. Turn your back on her. Go to another room. Don't think about it.
Right. And then, like we said in the couple episodes ago about false comfort is what you can, in retrospect, believe that is what saved you from the anxiety or helped you out of the situation. You used another example of false comfort being, say that you carry around your handbag full of hand sanitizer and water and a stress ball and other comforting things that you'll attribute, that's how I got through the day in that situation because I had those things on me.
Absolutely, 100%. And you can apply worried voice and false comfort to anything. The bridge, worried voice, what if you lose control and throw yourself off a bridge? False comfort, don't take the bridge, go around.
Right, yeah.
You're not teaching yourself that the amygdala is okay to experience. Meanwhile, Joe Bloggs is strolling along going, oh, that's a funny thought, and he's carrying on. Because his amygdala's not firing off. Another example, I once had a client a long time ago, and I'll kind of embellish the story so they don't kind of recognize it's them if they do. But a client was afraid they were going to harm the children, which is very common. And so what they did was they removed everything from their house. What if you harm your children? Wise mind, the mind that's, you know, rational mind is going, It's an intrusive thought and an anxious response. You're not going to lose control and you're not going to do that. But we forget that because worried voice and false comfort are extremely loud. So false comfort then says, yeah, oh my God, what if that does happen? Okay, go in the shed, get all the rope, get rid of it. All the knives, get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
All the medication, get rid of it so you don't spike them. Get rid of it. Don't cook the meat because you might kill them. You might be tempted to not cook it properly. You know, don't kiss them to bed at night. Yeah. And to the point where this woman moved out because she thought she was a danger to her children. But all that was happening is she was having an intrusive thought. And so what do you think we did together to try and solve this, to turn the amygdala off, to stop the intrusive thoughts being so intrusive?
Well, yeah, this is really tricky because false comforts are like you've put on padding, you know? That's maybe one metaphor that I can think of for it. It's probably kind of different for whatever different types of false comforts people use, but it's sort of like you're going out into the world with this padding that you believe needs to be there in order to function. And so I would imagine that if it was your client, it would be small steps of exposure to remove that padding that they have first, to kind of take the padding off piece by piece and make them realize that this is just, these are just thoughts. You have self-control, and empower them with self-control. And but that it must be the type of process that just takes a lot of time, and you can only do kind of inch by inch sort of thing.
I love that. Can I steal that?
I'm always trying to turn these into metaphors, and I know that every metaphor doesn't exactly map on to what it's like, but certain ones.
That is great. Yeah, it's great. It's like the padding, like.
It's like, you know, and it might be, so one type of, you know, anxiety that, you know, a lot of women face, and I can understand and relate to it, is like, I am only pretty with makeup on, and there's girls who might like attribute their worth going out into work, into social circles and everything because they look a certain way. And so like, literally that's close to a padding metaphor that I can think of. It's just like that they attribute people like me, because I look this way, when actually, when you slowly empower them to think like, you know, it's because of your personality, and it's because of what you do to serve people, and it's all these other things, it's actually not that padding that's sort of saving you, is kind of where I guess I got the padding metaphor from.
When you were saying it, I had this analogy of someone afraid of wasps, and so he goes and uses exposure therapy full of padding to see the wasp, and he doesn't get stung, but then he keeps doing it by removing a bit of padding each time, and then every time he does it, he always, I only did it because I was wearing padding, I didn't get stung because I wore padding. And then finally, when he has no padding left, he stands and doesn't get stung by the wasp. And then finally, he just realizes, actually, it's me. I managed to do it. You know, I didn't get stung because I was just brave enough to go and do it. And it's the same with intrusive thoughts. You know, so when I asked, what do you think this client did to alleviate it? You do the opposite of what false comfort says. So this client was saying, right, okay, I've moved out and I've taken out away all the knives and weapons, so I don't do it. So I said, no, this is what we need to do to turn off the amygdala. Obviously, not immediately. I'm explaining about how anxiety and intrusive thoughts work. So I said, no, go back. Get all the knives out. Get all the ropes. Obviously, in a safe way. You don't want to put the knives in your children's.
Just return your house into a normal state,
Yeah, but no, even go further. I said, go further. Sleep with rope in your room. Go further. Watch. Because you won't lose control. Because myth, and the main myth about intrusive thoughts, is people think it means something about them. So I mentioned the one about intrusive thoughts sexually, about awful taboo subjects. People go, but what if that means something about me? Well, actually, that response in itself says that it isn't something about you. because you don't want it. If you were entertaining the thoughts and like, actually, yeah, that's great, I fancy doing that, then that's a different scenario altogether.
Mm-hmm.
But intrusive thoughts do not mean anything about you. I had one the other day. There was a child, I was walking through Manchester, I was walking down past the canal near Old Trafford, and some little kids came down, cute little kid, on a BMX, and he was cycling past, and because there's a cycle path. I just had the thought, what if I kick this kid into the canal? Now, me, when I was anxious years ago, I would have gone, oh my God, you're evil, you want to do that? But I just laughed. I thought, what a funny thought to have. And so I started engaging with it. I was like, yeah, what if I really took a run up and just flying kicked this child into the canal? Because I'm safe knowing that that's not me.
Yes, yeah.
And that's the difference. The Joe Bloggs on the bridge, that's a funny thought.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're anxious, we get confused and think intrusive thoughts mean something. I hope that makes sense. I hope that you just don't think I'm like kicking children.
No, but the last thing that you said, that when we're anxious, we get confused. I think that's a really important thing. That, yeah, when we're anxious, we confuse the natural thoughts that just pass. Because, yeah, like anybody who's, if you're a foot away from that kid who's passing you, like, I guess it's like part of your brain going, oh yeah, I better not accidentally stumble into this kid, that then very quickly leads on to, what if I actually did push the kid into the canal? But,
yeah.
But yeah, that's such a good point, that when the amygdala is firing, we get confused. Like, I just totally resonate with that in itself. And so to lead that on to these intrusive thoughts makes total sense, I think.
When you're performing, you must get intrusive thoughts.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's actually probably the biggest thing, that when you start out performing, you're learning how to manage and figure out, is that you have most of the time it's the thoughts, the voices that are coming in your head are reading the facial expressions of people who are watching you, or not even like, because if you're a new or nervous performer, sometimes not the same thing, but oftentimes the same thing, that you're reading people's faces. And most of the time when people are watching a musical performance or stand up or a speech, like anything, you put on this facial expression just because you're trying to focus on what the words are and you're hearing. So you can kind of put on this kind of confused face. If you ever catch yourself next time you're watching a show, like, try to think about what your facial expression is actually doing. Not because you have to stop it, you're just doing you, but that we kind of strain our faces and look a bit puzzled just because we're actually trying to listen carefully. But the performer who's new might read that as, they think I'm an idiot, they don't like what I'm saying, they don't think I have a good voice, and you're kind of you're projecting other people's thoughts that become your intrusive thoughts. And the thing that I've just had to get over from back when I was just simply getting on stage and playing guitar and just not doing anything particularly gutsy or crazy, all the way to wearing a trash dress on stage in alternative comedy night, all the time what I'm doing is feeling fearless to make eye contact with everybody in the audience, regardless of what their facial expression is doing, and just trying to let those what are very loud intrusive thoughts become just white noise. That, okay, yeah, that person could be thinking that, or they could not be thinking that. They could just be.
Do you ever get any extreme ones? Like, so for me, when I do public speaking and do talks and stuff, I always get like ones like, "What if you just projectile vomit over the front row?"
Oh, right.
Yeah, and because I feel sick, because I'm nervous, it kind of adds a bit of reality to it. And what I actually do is I suppose it's a false comfort, really, but not. I just tell everyone, I'm like, I'm having an intrusive thought right now that I'm going to vomit over you. So if I do, my bad. Yeah. I also had Chinese for breakfast.
Well, might that's disarming for you and them, and I can see why that would work in a setting like that. That, yeah, that's yeah, why not? I don't think there's anything bad with that. And that it goes into the weird world of making your audience comfortable along with yourself. Obviously, if you're doing a eulogy, you can't do that. So maybe it is a false comfort. That's the place that you'd want to test that out.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting you said that, because I had an intrusive thought once, anxiety. It was at a family member's funeral. And I was trapped in. It was a really big service. And I had to leave because the anxiety was so bad. I listened to False Comfort. You know, I sit here pontificating about anxiety and what you need to do, but like, I'm human too.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sat in the funeral and the casket was coming in and getting carried in. I'm just this really strong, what if you throw up and pass out at a funeral in front of all these people, and even though it's not about you today. And and it was so strong. The amygdala was triggering the tension, the thoughts, the sweat, all the things I knew I shouldn't do. But at the same time, I thought, no, I'm just going to go out and have some air. And I didn't beat myself up after it. But I was like, next time, I'm not doing that. And next time, I didn't do that. You know, like in the next situation where I wanted to listen to False Comfort, I was like, I'm not doing that.
Because it also is immediate relief. And there's something to be said for that, that you just need to, yeah, and you can literally like get some fresh air and just breathe. Like, that's important too. The only thing that I can really resonate when you ask me like about like performing and intrusive thoughts is just that intrusive thoughts happen a lot more when I'm stressed, usually led on by something that's physiological, usually led on by I haven't had enough sleep, I've had a really long day, I haven't had enough water, I haven't had enough to eat. Like, it's, I can usually relate those things back to when there's something else not quite right. And that also sometimes helps to just recognize, like, I think there's something to be said for, and I don't know where this line stops and false comfort begins, but I remember actually it was just stumbling upon a video, Terry Crews, the actor, talking about his experience with addiction and how he learned in addiction counseling, and he was sharing in this video the acronym HALT, which is if you are a recovering addict and you feel yourself in that sort of frenzied state of, oh, I think I'm going to do it again, ask yourself four questions. Are you hungry? Are you angry? Are you lonely? Are you tired? And if you can assess yourself with those four measures, H-A-L-T for HALT, then you can take a breather before. And I think that that's just a huge thing, is even just taking even like a small moment for mindfulness before you
I like that.
Assess where you're at. It can
it's possible to be all four, right?
Yeah, you know, sometimes it's all of those things. I like that lonely's in there as well, because it's just like that, yeah, that's an emotional need. The rest are physical. Well, hungry, angry being has something, it's useful to kind of take a step back and assess, has there been something in the past few minutes or hours that I receive that I'm just not processing or assessing? Like, for example, this morning, I think I am just as bad as my mom on the opposite side of the political spectrum. It can be really interesting sometimes because we're both so tied to the news, and I'll, you know, be like, oh, mom, why are you watching CNN? Da, da, da. It's just going to make you more and more angry about this and this. And then, like, I found myself this morning watching the Prime Minister of Canada give a speech in the House of Commons, and then the Conservative leader giving a response back to it, and just getting so like frustrated and angry, and I just felt like I didn't want to do anything with my day, and then I just had to take a breather and be like, you know, you didn't have to watch
halt,
the news.
Ella.
halt the heck down. It was like, yeah, just taking a moment to go, oh right, I have a whole life that is completely separate from the news that's going on, and it was my choice to turn it on today, so I need to take a minute and just take a step back and go, what was I doing before I turned this on, and how can I get back to a kind of homeostasis before I got really angry?
That's a good level of awareness as well. I to just step out and go, actually, hold on, I'm not really happy with this reaction I'm having. Do you fancy a small quiz before we conclude our podcast on intrusive thoughts?
I think I just cracked my neck to stretch out a bit. Yeah, let's go for it.
Yeah, okay.
I'll mute that out for the listeners.
I'm going to get... No, keep it in. We're sure that we're human. I heard it right here, sat next to you. veneer.
Okay, pop quiz time. Let's do it.
Here's the quiz. Intrusive thoughts, Q&A. This is what ideally what you would do in a scenario. You walk into a building and you have an intrusive thought that you're going to get trapped in a lift, yet you work on the sixth floor. What do you do?
Well, a false comfort, Josh, would be to take the stairs, but instead, I would probably say that's a pretty irrational thought. It's very unlikely that that's going to happen. Take a breath and get in the lift.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Very well done. Are you gonna feel comfortable when you get in that lift?
Probably not. You might start have a bit of an anxious response. Maybe your amygdala is going to be going, but I was going to say, oh, maybe like talk to someone or something in lift. But then again, that could also be a false comfort. So,
oh, very well done.
So yeah. Probably just the best thing is to go. I mean, if you can, is to go. Okay, my palms are getting a bit sweaty. Like, try to have that high level, like that Emily Watford voice that we've talked about in previous episodes, or just like your wise mind, I guess you called it. Your wise mind. Try to focus on the wise mind that's saying this is irrational.
It's what Sally Winston and Marty Zaseef talk about, wise man. I'm not claiming it for my own. Okay. I'll happily claim credit for a lot of things, but I can't claim it from my idols.
Okay, but I do like wise mind of just sort of not fighting the anxious response, just acknowledging that it's there. And if it's not too much, I guess a lift is what, at most a minute. So you can think about the fact that you will be more proud of yourself having taken the lift and got up to the sixth floor via the lift than avoiding and reinforcing the anxious response by taking the stairs.
Excellent. 100%.
Yes.
Cool. Question two.
Okay.
You're at a bar with your friends, which you probably often are. But you've been struggling with an intrusive thought recently that your drink has been spiked. Your drink, despite the pub being empty and everyone being relatively friendly, your friend puts a drink in front of you. What do you do?
Well, it sounds sort of like I'm just being really blasé with all of these, just saying, oh, just have a drink, just go through that. So I'm really trying to put myself...
There will be a running theme here.
Yeah, I'm trying to sort of, you know, put myself in that situation. So the false comforts would be, in this situation, trying to sneakily dump out the drink and buy another from the bar because you're that paranoid that maybe you have your drink spiked.
You need to see the pint being pulled personally.
Another, I think less so of a false comfort, but somewhat of a false comfort, similar to you talking about a speech, might be joking to your friends and bringing up the fact of like, oh, is this spiked? Like, trying to sort of acknowledge it and make a joke out of it.
Yeah.
That's less of a false comfort, but, you know, you're still airing out that thought process. So I suppose the best thing is just in your wise mind to say that's highly unlikely and you're going to be fine.
Good.
For a drink.
Good. Here's one. You have an intrusive thought because you forgot to wash your hands this morning. And what hand washing is a big one. You have an intrusive thought that you get really ill because you're a germaphobe. And that will become from your hands touching stuff. What do you do?
Well, false comforts would be take out the Lysol and sanitize all your work surfaces and your laptop and everything that you've touched in the whole morning.
You can see where OCD starts, by the way. This is worried voice, false comfort, because this is genuinely how the pathology of kind of OCD is worried voice, false comfort.
Yeah. And then maybe a more marginal, less so false comfort would be going and washing your hands in that moment. But the solution would probably be listen to your wise mind that says it's fine. There's no spread of germs that's going to get you sick or give you a disease or kill you. That's pretty irrational right now. So don't worry about it. Continue
the on. The probability is so low. Like, you know, excellent. Yeah. A couple more. Doing well. Your friend wants you to babysit their 4-year-old child. But last time you saw them, you were having horrible intrusive thoughts about them.
Mm.
Now they said, can you please babysit my child tomorrow? What do you do?
Well, your false comfort would be to say no, I think. Your false comfort would be to make up some sort of excuse, say that you're busy so that you can't go. Acknowledging that, especially around kids, our anxious brain sometimes just goes into parental gear and is like extra concerned about the kid's safety and well-being, it's taboo. What might happen.
And it's just taboo.
Right.
It's so, it just at the stake, I can't remember who the, I think it might have been Sally Winston and Martin Seif again, the stakes are higher.
Yeah.
It's all good not washing your hands and all that, but the stakes are higher when it comes to like really grim taboo subjects. I mean, I don't care, I'll talk about the subjects because I just...
Right.
But can you see to, say, anyone day to day, you know, that's just the unspoken, isn't it? And so therefore, the stakes are higher. The amygdala releases more. And so yeah, you're right. Yeah.
I think the wise voice in my head would just say, any thought that comes up is as normal as thoughts that anybody else babysitting would have. What I have isn't unique to me. It doesn't make me a weird person if I have any of these thoughts. And I'm rational and nothing bad's going to happen.
Perfect. Perfect. That's, I love that where you said it's not unique to me and it's perfectly okay to, I really like that. I'm just trying to think of a last one. Okay. There's one more. Okay. You're driving down the motorway or the highway, if you're in that side of the Atlantic, and you have an intrusive thought that if you go into the fast lane, you're just suddenly going to veer into the central embankment, causing a multi-car pileup, mass deaths, and people only being able to identify you through the teeth scraped off the road 300 yards away.
Well, what do you do? I went really far with that thought, didn't I? So the false comfort would be to stay in the slow lane the whole time, never enter the fast lane to pass any cars, and you'll always stay safe. But realistically, I know I'm a good driver. If I'm on the motorway, I've passed my license, and that isn't going to happen.
Well, it might happen. But I'm okay. Well, what's not going to happen is you veering into the central embankment purposely. But you can never be certain that an accident might not happen. But you do that every day. Just like, you know. But when it comes to losing control, you're right. I'm not going to lose control. I'm not going to suddenly do that.
Yeah,
do you know
because
what I mean?
Of the fact that I have had that thought, curious about losing control, that demonstrates that I'm not going to lose control is probably how honestly my thought process would go. Just like you said, that if a fear has come up, it's only just built your awareness for what it is and what you're doing. And you could wise mind rationalize the situation by saying it's more often a careless fatigue driver that's going to happen to. And I've just had that thought. So that's not going to happen to me.
Yeah. Cause it's the opposite. You're alert.
Yeah.
You're awake. Yeah. Wonderful. Wow, I think we'll leave that there. We can come back
like
to intrusive thoughts.
That's been a good test of, thanks for all the examples, kind of back to back to back, because it's hard to kind of, I felt hard kind of just making everything sound like, it's fine, it's okay, which your voice comes in whenever I'm thinking that.
No, but just
right.
Do it.
It's going to happen, just do it.
But yes, it's right. You said, just do it. Don't do what false comfort says.
Yeah.
What if you have this in a lift? Well, get in the lift. What if you have this thought about a child, then hang around with a child. What if you have this thought about murdering your children? Well, then go cuddle them at night. Do you know what I mean? Doing all these different things. What if you fear throwing yourself off a bridge? Well, then go run up and down a bridge till you're not scared anymore. You know, it's that kind of thing. It sounds simplistic, but when people know
Mm-hmm.
Why it's effective.
Yeah.
I found that it encourages them to approach it. But
anyway. And honestly, Josh, since doing this podcast with you, the number of times I've actually like had the phrase, what would you normally do, come into my mind. That's from you, and that's been really cool that that's, just what would be the most normal thing. And honestly, in the last episode, in Avoidance, two episodes ago, talking about my fear of Word documents, that really genuinely helped, because I just had to hand stuff in two nights ago. And when I was working on it during the day and I wanted to avoid it the whole day, it was like, do I have to do laundry? Do I have to make a cup of tea? Do I have to? It was like, I was trying to avoid that. And I was
identifying your own little false comforts.
I was recognizing, and you know, there was times where it was just taking a little bit too long at lunch to talk to my parents instead of just getting back to it. But I always feel that's like marble on the table. You just have to keep putting it back. And it's just, it's not about how many times it falls off the table. It's just about how many times you've put it back on the table. But honestly, your words in my head have just like, what's the most normal thing you could do right now? Okay, well, sit next to my laptop with a cup of tea and open this document again. It really, really helps. And I think that that mantra of what's normal right now, just do what's normal, is like really, really valuable. So I'm glad that you quizzed me on that, because it just reiterates that same thing over and over. It's good.
Thank you. I need to work on taking compliments better. This is really, well, that's really nice. All right. We'll conclude it there, I think.
Yeah.
And what we can do is have a chat afterwards about what we want to talk about next, because there's loads of good stuff. If any of today's episode has resonated with listeners, please email in. Someone came up to me at a gig the other day. I won't name them, but they said, "Oh, I feel a bit nervous asking questions." I was like, "Ask away. We need them."
Yeah.
You know, because it will help guide us throughout this kind of, do I say it? Yeah, journey, podcast journey. Yeah, I said it. So feel free. It's talk@thepanicroom.co.uk. That's talk@thepanicroom.co.uk. We're also going to celebrate the fact that we've had over 1,000 streams.
Thank you all so much. Thank you for our listeners for listening. And if you shared it with anybody, we really, really appreciate that. It fills us with so much joy.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, so yeah, send us an email, give us an update, see what you we'll see what you guys are up to. Anyway, for now, see you soon.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.